This is Word on the Street, important happenings and events in and around our community.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Word on the Street. I'm your host, Gianna Wilcox, and this show is all about our community and how we at Cumulus Media can help. Today, I'm with Amber Harris, the Director of Development and Communications for the Women's Resource Center to End Domestic Violence. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. So let's just go ahead and roll right into it. Could you give me a little bit of background and history about the Women's Resource Center?
Absolutely. So in 1985, there was a woman named Gwendolyn Ann Turnbow, and she had experienced domestic violence at the hands of her husband. And she did everything that, you know, from community, media, everything we think of as doing, you know, the right thing. She left. She called the police. She engaged with law enforcement and participated in prosecution. He went to jail. She moved. She did everything that we would tell a survivor of domestic violence that they're supposed to do. The minute he came out of jail, he found her in her new home and killed her in the presence of their son. So that was 1985. And at the time, DeKalb County didn't have any formal domestic violence services. So a task force was formed in DeKalb County to look at the issue of domestic violence and to see, was this actually a problem that DeKalb County should care about, that should DeKalb County should look into? And of course, the answer was yes, that this was a problem that was far-reaching and impacted a lot of women, children, and other survivors. So the task force granted $10,000 in 1986 to form what at the time was the Women's Resource Center of DeKalb County. And we started with a hotline and support groups. And that was about it. Over the years, we have obviously grown tremendously, but we still look to Gwendolyn kind of as our root, as our spirit, as the horrible tragedy, but beautiful life that kind of got this all started. And we found out a few years ago, I guess it was 2017, 2018-ish, somewhere around in there, we didn't make the connection between Gwendolyn Turnbow and Natasha Trethewey. But we found out that Gwendolyn Ann Turnbow was Natasha Trethewey's mother, and Natasha Trethewey was a U.S. Poet Laureate in President Obama's first administration. She taught at Emory and has actually written quite a bit about her mother's life. And so she wrote a memoir kind of about her life, but also reflecting a lot on her mother's life that she released a few years ago, 2021, 2022-ish, called Memorial Drive, because her mother was murdered on Memorial Drive in DeKalb County.
My goodness, that is such a powerful story and a powerful beginning to an organization that has done so much good. I mean, I think it's great that you pointed out that she did everything that you would tell survivors to do: get law enforcement involved, get involved with the lawyers and prosecution, be part of every step of the process, move if you have to, distance yourself. And she did all those things, and still it wasn't enough. I think it's just really goes to show that even if you do everything right, it doesn't always mean you're going to be safe and okay in the end.
Exactly. And that's why so much of the focus of anti-domestic violence work needs to be on those who perpetrate violence, because those who are impacted by violence can do everything right, and still they don't have control over their partner's actions. And so when we talk to those experiencing domestic violence, we often will go back to saying you can only take ownership of your own actions. And as much as you want that other person to change, as much as you, you know, want to invest and feel like you can change them, you only have control over your own actions. And so a lot of work has to be done in our society around teaching people not to use power and control in relationships, teaching people to treat their partners with respect and respect boundaries. And so that's a lot of the work that we do with children, in fact, is working on, you know, peaceful problem solving and how to manage your own emotions without letting your emotions carry you into a place that conflicts with your own personal values.
Yes, you're exactly right. I think it's very good that you guys are definitely starting with children when you're teaching them how to regulate their emotions, cope with their emotions, how to handle them properly, because then you don't have them growing up only thinking that they can solve their problems, you know, deal with their emotions with violence. Mm-hmm. So it's great that you're starting kind of at the very beginning to make sure nothing gets out of hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have programming that starts with kids as young as five. You know, we're not talking about romantic relationships. We're talking about what you do when your sister rips the head off your Barbie. Do you hit her with the Barbie body, or can you take a pause and have a conversation about that? Can you step away? How do you calm your body when you start to feel mad? What does that feel like in your body? If your heart is racing, if your palms are sweaty, even little bitty kids can understand, oh, my body is telling me something. And so we work with a lot of our kids on strategies. We talk about the power in the pause. Because what we know is that we have about 25 seconds between a triggering event and the time that, our emotions can just kind of run away with us. But there's a power in that pause and taking that 25 seconds to do some emotional regulation and to think, okay, how do I want to react to this? Not what am I going to be carried into based on muscle memory, based on what I've seen in my family, in my community, in the media, but how do I, as an individual person with my own value system, want to react to that? And so we do a lot of that work with teenagers in the DeKalb County school system and in our own programming within Women's Resource Center. But we have a summer camp that is free for the families that we serve that serves kids as young as 5 all the way up to 18. And even those little bitty kids, we can talk about how to regulate your emotions and how to make good decisions around being a good friend, being a good sibling, being a good student, because those are lessons even little bitty kids can learn that will prime them to have much healthier relationships when they are older and they start dating.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, my mom is a school teacher, and right now she's teaching first grade. And I feel like if some of those kids in her classroom had the tools that you are giving some children, she wouldn't be dealing with some of the behaviors and difficulties she is dealing with because these kids don't know how to regulate their emotions. So they do what they first think of, and that's throw their pencil across the room or stand up and scream and throw a tantrum. So by giving them these tools, it not only helps the child, but also helps the other children they interact with, their teachers, their counselors, anyone else who comes into their lives. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, if nobody teaches you those skills, you don't have those skills. And so maybe throwing a pencil and stomping your foot and having a tantrum when you're angry works when you're 6, but it doesn't work when you're 36. But if no one teaches you how to react any differently, then we're still going to be doing the grown-up version of that. And so one of the things that's really important to us as Women's Resource Center is we're not asking the people that we serve to go through any programming that we don't go through ourselves. So when we started the emotional literacy curriculum that we use, we went through it as a staff. We spent 8 weeks meeting, on a Thursday evening at someone's house going through this curriculum. And it made a huge difference for us. As adults, some of us have experienced domestic violence and some of us haven't. Some of us have experienced our own traumas and some of us haven't. But, going through that process was valuable for us, and learning those skills can be important for anybody.
Oh yeah, 1000%. I like that you guys are not only talking about it, but being about it, so that when you are helping these survivors, you're not just like, oh, I've heard this works, or I read the material, or like, no, I went through the class and I know this can help you. I know it can work. I love that.
Well, because what we know is the only difference between us and the folks that we're serving is we don't have an abusive partner in our lives at this moment. Some of our staff have experienced domestic violence either with their own partner or as a child growing up in a violent relationship between their parents. Some of us have had, our own traumatic experiences with relationship or sexual violence, things like that. But, and then some of us haven't. But the only thing that's different between us and the folks that we're serving is that we don't have an abuser in our lives right now. That doesn't mean we won't in the future. That doesn't mean we have it in the past. But domestic violence crosses all lines, all demographic lines, nation of origin, religion, race, sexual orientation. Domestic violence can impact anybody.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You can never think, oh, that won't happen to me, because you don't know that. It could happen to you. I mean, God forbid that it would, but it might. So it's better to be prepared. I always say I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So I think
Exactly.
that really applies to having these skills to coping with anything that you might face.
And that really applies to kind of our very existence as an organization, as a community. Wouldn't you rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it? So investing in the work that we do is important because, you never know if someone that you're close to is going to need these services. And so it makes a huge impact in our community to know that these services exist.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So you guys have been around for almost 40 years at this point. So first off, congratulations on being around for so long and doing work for this good work for so long. But how was it getting through COVID, not just from like a business standpoint, but also with the people that you serve and someone maybe being stuck in the house with their abuser?
So COVID was a very, very challenging time in our work for a number of reasons. I have a very visceral memory of us as a staff. We actually happened to be all having a staff meeting on the day that Georgia sort of announced that we were all going to go under lockdown.
Oh,
And
wow.
so, and there were, you know, all of the rationing of how much toilet paper you could buy and things like that. Well, we have a safe house of 32 people. So we all took off and went to different Krogers and different Publixes to buy as much toilet paper as we were allowed to bring back to our safe house. You know, we made a list of all of the supplies we were going to need, you know, all of the basic food items, and then we wanted to make sure we had pizza and snacks and, you know, ice cream and fun things for the families too. And we made a list for about 2 weeks. We thought, okay, we'll do a lockdown for 2 weeks. That's as long as it's going to last. So we'll make a plan. Obviously, it lasted quite a bit longer than that, and so we were stuck with exactly that idea of what are we going to do with folks who are already in our safe house that can't go out and look for work. They can't go out. Like the kids aren't going to school. The families aren't leaving the safe house. As a staff, we don't want to be coming in and out of the safe house constantly, exposing the families who are living there. And then what do we do in the community? Because you're right, there were a lot of people who were then trapped in a home with someone who was abusive. They weren't leaving to go to work. Their partner wasn't leaving to go to work. The kids weren't leaving to go to school. And so a lot of those places where people would have access points to help or at least respite from leaving that person's presence for a certain amount of time a day, those were gone. And so the number of calls we were getting on our hotline was skyrocketing. But then, of course, the other services that we offer, our legal services, our support groups, you know, we weren't getting people who were reaching out to us for those kinds of services. So we tried to pivot as creatively as we could. We first switched all of our support groups to virtual and, you know, made some different kind of rules and guidelines around how can we safety plan with people so that they can attend our support groups, because it's difficult if you're trying to do a support group but your partner is in the background. You know, so can you go out on your phone in the car? You know, can you drive somewhere that has free Wi-Fi but sit in the parking lot so you're not going in and exposing yourself to anything, but you're using the Wi-Fi from the parking lot to log into our support groups? So we had to start being very, very creative about the way that we safety planned with people and the kind of information we can give them. During the COVID years, and of course, it's not, the pandemic is not gone, but during the years that it was at kind of its peak, we pivoted a lot of our services because, again, we weren't having people come to us for direct services as much, but we knew that families were losing income, that women wanted to leave but didn't have an option. And so we ended up putting a great deal of resources into direct financial support. So during, I think, 2021, we awarded about $500,000 in direct financial support to survivors of domestic violence who were either, you know, afraid that they were going to get evicted because they had lost their job or because they were single moms and they were having to stay home with kids because kids weren't in school. If they needed to leave, but they weren't going to be able to come up with first month's rent and deposit because they weren't working. If they needed to go to a new place and they needed security, you know, they needed a camera or a, you know, Ring doorbell or a security alarm, something like that in their new place. So we went from about $50,000 a year to about $500,000 a year. I want to say in 2022, it was still about $450,000 a year. So we were looking at just changing up how we used our resources and then reaching out to the community, to grant funders, to individuals who care about women that they knew were going to be unsafe. And then we worked with a lot of community partners. So we formed a great partnership with the emergency room physicians at Grady. And so when they would come in, because they had a huge uptick in the number of folks coming to the emergency room because they had significant physical injuries because they weren't able to get away from that partner. And so we worked with the emergency room physicians and the social workers at Grady to say, okay, if somebody came into the emergency room, we were going to make sure that they had somewhere to go when they were discharged that wasn't back to the home of the person who sent them to the ER in the first place. So how can we help them get into a new place and get stabilized? Or if they have family in another state, how can we get them to Charlotte or Houston or, wherever they can go to be with family members who can support them? So a lot of what we did during COVID was just pivoting and trying to be as creative as we could and trying to reallocate the resources that we had to really meet the needs of survivors at that moment. And, we had to be flexible. We had to figure some stuff out along the way, but we did not have to lay off any staff. We did not lose any services. We changed them up, but we didn't end any of our programming. And I think, I like to think that we made a significant difference for a lot of people during that time.
Oh, yes, of course. I love that it wasn't just, oh, we're going to switch everything to virtual. You really tailored your entire organization to the needs of your survivors during that time. So, of course, we're going to switch things to virtual with the support group so that you can still talk to us even though you're stuck in the house with this person. We're going to give you ideas about where you could go to where you could still participate but not feel scared where you have to sort of censor what you're telling us. And then also your partnership with Grady, that's just amazing to make sure that they get the care that they need, but also making sure they don't have to go right back home to the person who caused this, who put me in the hospital. And then just like the money aspect of it, because that was also a huge part of COVID. People were getting laid off or like they weren't able to go to the office. And I don't know how some landlords were dealing with that, but I'm sure a few of them were like, I don't care, you still need to pay your rent. And some people couldn't. So I love that you guys didn't just switch to completely online, but you guys did so many different things to make sure you could continue to help people.
And that's something that's really important to us is keeping our services flexible enough that we can meet survivors where they are now. Because even in the past few months, as things are changing so rapidly on a federal level, on a state level, on a local level, we're still having to change up how we provide services every day. How do we reach out to the people who need us? How do we make sure that they know that our services are available to anyone and everyone who needs our services, while also recognizing that, in times of economic transition, in times of economic vulnerability, domestic violence rates go up. That's something that we saw during COVID. That's something that we saw during the Great Recession. It's something that you see in any period of economic vulnerability is that rates of domestic violence go up. And so we're already preparing for what that looks like. Our community office is right in downtown Decatur, and Decatur has been, significantly impacted by cuts to the CDC and federal workforce layoffs and things like that. And so we're already seeing in our immediate community what that can look like. Yeah, it's just anytime anything is changing on the federal level, the state level, the local level. I mean, even things like changing up MARTA routes impacts the folks that we serve. Anything, small changes to local legislation or changes to state laws or state funding priorities, things like that, all of those have an impact on families. And ultimately, because domestic violence can really impact anyone regardless of background, it all of it trickles down to the families that we're serving, and we just have to remain responsive.
Yes, you're 1,000% right. Like, I feel like any changes, big or small, can frustrate a person. And then, unfortunately, like we were mentioning earlier, if they don't know how to regulate their emotions, they're going to take it out on the ones they supposedly love and care about the most. And unfortunately, even like the bigger changes, like economics, money is one of the main stressors for a lot of people. So, when they're feeling that stress and they don't know how to deal with that otherwise, unfortunately, they're going to take it out on the people in their home. And like you said, it causes a rise in domestic violence because of everything else going on in the world, which is just, it's just so sad.
Yeah, and I think what people don't really realize about domestic and sexual violence is that it's about power and control. And so you're absolutely right. If someone is feeling vulnerable, if they're feeling like they don't have power in other areas of their life, their boss is being, cruel to them, or they're not performing well at work, if they don't feel like they're earning and they can take care of their family, if other things are going on in their life that are making them feel powerless, then often they will come home and they will exert their power over those that they feel like they can get away with exerting power over. And so Again, domestic violence can impact everyone, but the majority of domestic violence, we see is perpetrated by those who have more power against those who have less power.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate that, you may be underperforming at work, so your boss is kind of on you about it, and because you can't retaliate against your boss, you're going to retaliate against the weaker person at home. And that's just, it's unfortunately, that's kind of the way that it is until we see bigger changes in society as a whole.
Welcome back to Word on the Street.
If you're just now tuning in, you're listening to Word on the Street. I'm Gianna with Amber Harris, the Director of Development and Communications for the Women's Resource Center to End Domestic Violence. So just continuing on here, we've kind of like mentioned briefly here and there about the programs and services you offer. Could you give a little bit more detail about that?
Absolutely. So we serve survivors of domestic violence and now actually survivors of sexual assault as well. So just this year in March, we have incorporated programming for sexual assault survivors into our work as well. For survivors of domestic violence, we work with folks basically through their whole journey to safety. So we're working with women, children, and other survivors from the time that they may be calling us and they're in an abusive relationship. They're calling our 24-hour hotline and they don't know what to do. They're reaching out to somebody for the very first time. They want to engage in conversation and say, is this the way that relationships are supposed to be? Is this normal? Am I wrong for feeling like I don't want to be treated like this? And so a lot of the first services that we provide are just validation to say, no, you don't deserve to be treated that way. No, this is not how all relationships are, and you deserve to find a partner who will treat you with kindness and respect, someone who will allow you to have your own interests and your own friends, someone who will allow you to see your family, to have a job if you want to have a job, someone who will respect you as an individual. If a person on our hotline or somebody contacting us another way decides that they do want to leave an abusive relationship, then we have a safe house. And it's 32 beds located in Metro Atlanta. And it's really meant to be sort of triage, if you think of it in those kinds of terms. It's a short-term stay where folks can come, you can come in the middle of the night if you're fleeing an emergency, if you are able to talk with one of our hotline advocates and make a plan about how you're going to leave, when it's going to be safest. That's always best. But also sometimes if you need to leave at 3 o'clock in the morning, you need to leave at 3 o'clock in the morning. And our safe house is available for families to come and stay with us. And we provide for all their basic needs. So 3 meals a day and snacks, programming for kids, washer dryer, families will get their own room with a bathroom. If you're a single person, you might share a bedroom with one other person, but we provide meals and we provide a lot of services that are all voluntary. So if you would like to see a therapist, you have that option. If you would like to go through financial programming and pull your credit score and work on a budget and be paired one-on-one with a pro bono financial planner, you can do that. If you want to go to parenting support groups to talk about what it's like to parent kids who've experienced trauma, we have that available. And then you also have someone that you meet with regularly one-on-one that will sit down with you and just say, what are your goals for your time here? What do you want to accomplish? And it may be, I want to further my education. I want to get a job. I need to sign up for these kinds of benefits. I have these mental or physical health conditions that I need to see a doctor for, whatever that is. Or it could be, I want to move in with my sister, who lives, somewhere far away, but she's going to be able to support me and my family. And so we talk about those goals and then support the guests in our safe house on moving toward whatever their personal goals are. And then the average safe house stay is about 3 months. And from that, families are moving into permanent housing. We can help with that financially. We can provide rapid rehousing funds to provide for a deposit, first couple of months rent, so you can move into permanent housing a little bit more quickly than you could if you had to save up all of that yourself. We also partner with transitional housing programs and offer some of our own transitional housing. So say, you've been working on a degree, or you have some major physical health issues that really need to be addressed, or there's something going on that it would be really helpful for you to have some extra time with some extra support, then that's something that can be available as well. So families are moving out of our safe house into permanent housing, and we're continuing to work with them. So we're continuing to make sure they have access to therapy, that they have access to financial planning and resources, that they still can engage with our outreach programming that really works to connect survivors of domestic violence with one another to build community. Because what we know is that people who are abusive to their partners often isolate their partners so that they have fewer outlets, fewer places to reach out for help. And so when it's time to leave, she may not have anybody left that she can call on. And so with our services, our outreach services, and our sisters group, we really help women who've experienced domestic violence build community with one another so that if if your battery dies in your car, you have somebody who can you can call on to take your kids to school. If you're sick, you have somebody you can call on to run to the store and get you some, some Tylenol and some chicken soup. Because we all need our bench. We all need our village. And a lot of women who've experienced domestic violence have been isolated from friends and family. So, we help them build that again and create that again with women who have had similar experiences, who know what it's like to go through something like that. And they, they're raising their kids together and they're supporting one another in these really beautiful friendships so that even after they move out of the safe house, they're still very connected to the WRC family and they're still very connected to the services that we provide.
Yeah, I think community is just a major part of it. If you feel like you have people to support you, it makes you have the confidence where you're like, I can leave this person who's abusing me or abusing me and my family or who's, causing all this pain in my life. Like, I'm not alone in this, and I have people who will support me to get me out of this. I love that so much that you're helping build that community aspect.
Absolutely. And it's so valuable for the women that we serve. They come back to the safe house and provide programming for families who are currently in the safe house. Like they always come back and do a Christmas party, things like that. Just kind of, it's not a formal mentorship program, but just I stayed in the safe house, 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, and look at where I am now. I did it and you can too. And it provides a sense of hope and inspiration for families who are in the safe house in a time where they feel really vulnerable and it feels hard. A lot of the women that we're working with are on their own for the first time after having heard for whatever number of years that you're never going to make it on your own. You're a horrible mom. Nobody else is ever going to want you. You're stupid. You can't do this. And so that's a time that women can be really, really vulnerable. When it's hard, they pull up all of those things that they've heard about how I can't make it. And so having other women in their lives that can say, yes, you can. I've been there. It's hard, but also you can do it. And this is what it looks like on the other side. See how happy my kids are. See how we're living, how we're moving through the world. And the freedom that I have now, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it really does. Like, just like I said, just having people in your corner, like you said, having your village, it just makes a world of a difference for these women who, like you said, who have constantly had this person in their ear saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, you're not this, you're not that, you're never gonna amount to anything, you're this, that, and the third. So having all these women come up to you and be like, I forget what he said. That's not true. That's not true at all. You can actually, you can do this, you can do that, you are this, all these positive reinforcements. I think it's great because it just helps them get onto a better path, but also it sets a great example for their kids so that once you're out of that spot, once you're out of that bad spot, it's not bad forever. There is, light at the end of the tunnel.
And we see such beautiful relationships built between women and their kids when they're in the safe house. Because a lot of times their moms are moving from a space where they're having to prioritize their partner's every emotion, every whim, so that it doesn't set him off. That's their way of protecting their kids is by doing everything to keep him happy. And so lots of times they don't have that emotional space for their kids, but they're doing it for their kids, they're doing it to protect their kids, but they don't have a lot of extra teaspoons, extra water in their bucket for their kids. And so when they come into the safe house, having them find the energy to renew that relationship with their kids, to spend quality time with their kids. You know, we do family fun days at least once a month in the safe house, if not more often, where we're planning things that moms and the kids can do together. It's just so beautiful. We recently had a fundraiser, and the video that we showed at our fundraising event really highlighted a mother and a daughter. The daughter was about 13, and so she had had a rough time before she came into the safe house. You know, she had some complicated feelings about her mom because she felt like her mom should have left that partner. And coming into the safe house, they were able to have some really good heart-to-heart conversations about that. And leaving that relationship helped her prove to her daughter that, no, I'm going to put your safety first, and I'm going to put your feelings first. And just the beautiful relationship that they have been able to cement with one another since then is just amazing to watch. And it's really a gift for those of us on the staff to be able to play witness to that and be part of that.
Yeah, like you're not only healing individuals, you're mending relationships,
Absolutely.
which is huge, because I know sometimes children can have complicated feelings about their parents. So just having them in this better environment can just have them see, like, my mom, she's human, so she's gonna make these mistakes, but that doesn't mean she doesn't care about me. So you guys are really changing these people's lives, like, across the board. So one thing that kind of caught my eye about your programs and services is that you guys also do elder abuse advocacy, which I thought was, I feel like interesting is the wrong word, but I found interesting because I feel like when people hear domestic violence, they don't think about that aspect. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
So we started a partnership with the Office of Aging Services and some other departments within DeKalb County a number of years ago, because we do recognize that a good amount of elder abuse is coming from family members. And when we talk about domestic violence, we often think about romantic relationships, but there are other relationships where you can use power and control against someone in your family. Whether that's a family member that you're romantically connected with, or it's a sister, a brother, parent, a grandparent, a child. And so we have these partnerships with senior centers around Metro Atlanta, with departments of aging services and service providers for older adults. And a big part of what we do in that sphere is actually helping with temporary protective orders, which is what Georgia calls a restraining order. And we help a lot of older adults who need to file restraining orders against their adult children or grandchildren who are staying with them. One of the impacts of COVID certainly is that you find family members who are coming home to live back in the family home again when they might have been, you know, out in their own apartment, something like that. So we have a lot of intergenerational families living together in Atlanta. And depending on the experiences of each family member, that can cause a lot of strife. Sometimes we have adult children who are taking advantage of their older parents as far as financial abuse, misallocating their resources. And, you know, there's a lot of overlap between some forms of elder abuse and forms of abuse against people who have disabilities as well. So, withholding your access to a wheelchair or some kind of medical equipment so that you can't leave, withholding medication that you may need access to, misusing finances that you get if you get some kind of, you know, supplemental Social Security income or something like that. And so we actually are serving quite a few older adults who are experiencing some form of abuse, sometimes by a romantic partner, sometimes by a spouse, but often adult children or grandchildren that they've allowed to come and live in their homes who are taking advantage of that situation and misusing power and control over this vulnerable older person.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, you move back in sometimes to help them out, but then it gets twisted in a way where you realize that they're super dependent on you, and then you just take advantage of them, which is unfortunate because they needed you to come back and help them, and you're doing the exact opposite. So I am glad that you guys are kind of covering every aspect of domestic violence and also now sexual assault, because those, I feel like sometimes those two things kind of tie in together. So I think it's great that you guys are covering all aspects of that.
So we're now one of two organizations in the metro area that's considered a dual agency, a dual domestic violence and sexual assault agency. And this is new for us, but there was a longstanding organization called the DeKalb Rape Crisis Center. Some other folks may know it as the DALEAG, but they are a longstanding service organization in DeKalb County serving survivors of domestic violence. And last year, their executive director retired, and their board really took a look at what the future of this organization could be and should be. And so they approached the Women's Resource Center and said, you are an organization that has a very strong foundation. There's a lot of overlap between our services and the people that we serve. Would you be interested in merging with us? And so we, over the course of about 6 months, looked at what that would look like. And what we realized very quickly is we did not want these services to disappear. It was very important to us that sexual assault services continued to be available in Metro Atlanta, because I mentioned that two organizations in Metro Atlanta are dual agencies, but including us in the 5-county metro area, there are only four organizations providing sexual assault services. If you branch out to the greater Metro Atlanta area, then there are about five. We're an area with a huge number of colleges and universities. We have very dense populations of people, and we know that sexual violence of a variety of kinds impacts a lot of people. And survivors of sexual violence and sexual assault deserve to have somewhere that they can go for healing, whether that's for emergency crisis services. I need to talk to somebody right now. This is something that's happened to me recently. I need to talk through my options of what I might want to do next, whether I want to engage with law enforcement or not, whether I want to seek therapy or not. How do I process this on my own? How do I talk to friends and family members about it or not? How do I address it with the college or university that I attend? And then we also offer long-term services. If someone who survived sexual assault does decide they need to get a restraining order against the person who assaulted them, or they do want to engage in with law enforcement and prosecute, and they need a forensic exam, or if they want to engage with support groups or long-term therapy, those are services that that are incredibly important. And we want to make sure that those didn't go away.
Yeah, I love that you guys were so dedicated to the work that even though this organization was going through changes, you were like, we're like, let's merge. Let's make sure we can reach more people. Let's make sure we can do more things so that you guys don't have to shut down and we lose one of only five now that you're, which I think is crazy to hear because although I feel like on the map, Metro Atlanta kind of looks small, there are so many people here. And I know we all joke about traffic and oh, it's so overpopulated, but there are so many people here. And if you think about also adding in the colleges, you have people coming in from out of state, sometimes out of the country, and they end up needing help. We need more organizations or at least more overlapping their coverage so that people can get help whenever and wherever they need it.
Absolutely. And you're right that there's a lot of overlap between the two causes of domestic violence and sexual assault. So it's some of that work we were doing already. We were already helping with restraining orders for survivors of sexual assault. We already took a lot of those calls on our 24-hour domestic violence hotline. But now we're able to really dedicate staff and resources and services to those survivors of sexual assault who may not be experiencing domestic violence. And then we're also able to integrate our services to provide more holistic support to those folks whose experiences overlap with domestic violence and sexual assault.
Yeah, that is very important. I'm really glad that you guys are, like I said earlier, just covering all aspects of this cause. So obviously you guys are doing amazing work. So how can people get involved with
We can always use your time, talent, and treasure. So, time would be volunteering. We have lots of opportunities to volunteer and can use whatever your special skills are, or we can put you to work however you're interested in. So, for example, we have an amazing volunteer who comes to our safe house once a week and brings in fresh flowers and waters all of our plants. And that's what she is able to do. That's the time commitment she's able to make. And it's wonderful because we have lots of greenery in the safe house. It makes families feel welcome. We have beautiful fresh flowers. And that's a significant way that she's contributing to our work. We have other volunteers who are facilitating support groups, and they've gone through intensive training, and they come back, a couple of times a month, and they're facilitating support groups. We have volunteers who work with our kids doing, homework help and reading to them and then modeling healthy behavior and helping them regulate emotions. We have volunteers who accompany sexual assault survivors when they're getting their forensic exams so that, we have trauma-informed nurses who are actually performing the exam, but we also have volunteers and advocates who are there to hold your hand, who are there to, to comfort you, to make sure you're feeling okay. Do you need a blanket? Do you, what else? What other ways can we support you during this process? So we really have volunteer opportunities for everyone. I mean, if you're a retired person and you just want to come and rock babies, you can come and rock babies. If you want to really get involved in our work on a meaningful level and you're willing to put the time in, then we have opportunities for you too. So that's
Fantastic.
time and talent, because we can definitely use folks who have special skills. If you have a background, if you're an attorney and you want to take on some pro bono divorce cases, if you are a medical provider and you want to come in and, provide some services for us, if you have special talents, like if you, are an artist and you want to do some, paint and sips, we'll get some sparkling cider and set you up at our safe house to do some, fun art projects with the guests at our safe house. If you have marketing expertise and you want to give me a call and help us get more information about our services out there, we can absolutely use those talents. And then we can always use your treasure. So if you are able to financially support our work, donations from $5 that can help pay somebody's MARTA card so she can get back and forth to court hearings or medical appointments or job interviews, all the way up to, whatever you're able to give that might be able to pay for a week for a child to end our violence prevention summer camp that we do every summer. If you are able to sponsor, a week on our hotline to make sure that our 24-hour domestic violence hotline is covered for anyone who wants to call in and speak to a compassionate human being. We can always use monetary donations and then also donations of items. So coming into the school year, the kids at our safe house need backpacks full of school supplies. Coming into the holidays, we're definitely collecting presents for the kids. We have kids all year round in the safe house who are celebrating birthdays, so we do birthday parties for them. Families coming into our safe house often had to leave a lot behind. So new clothing, bags, shoes, things, housewares, dishes, and pots and pans. We do like to give the families new things when possible and things that are in very, very good condition. But you can always give us a call at our community office and see what we need at any given time. And we would love to have your listeners support our work so that we can continue to be there just in case anybody, in their network ends up needing us. And then knowing that, our hotline is always ringing and our safe house is almost always full. So even if it's not somebody in your immediate circle that needs us, there are folks out there using our services all the time, every day. Last year, we answered almost 6,000 calls to our domestic violence hotline. So there are always folks reaching out to us for help.
Yeah, sounds like so many ways to get involved, like you said, with your time, your talent, or your treasures. Like, no matter how little time or money or how much you want to spend, how much time you want to spend there's so many ways to get involved. It's great. Every little bit helps.
Absolutely.
So, I saw that you guys recently had your Champions for Change event. Do you have any other events coming up?
Every year we have kind of two major events, our Champions for Change fundraising event in the spring, and then we always have a candlelight vigil for domestic violence a month in October. As we are incorporating sexual assault services, we're hoping to do more with Sexual Assault Awareness Month in April as well. But our next big event is going to be our vigil in October. It's always the third Thursday in October. And it's really a time for us to memorialize those in the state of Georgia who've been killed in domestic violence homicides. So we actually light a candle and read out the individual name of each person in Georgia who was killed in a DV homicide in the past 12 months. And usually it's about 150 names just in the state of Georgia. And so we take that time to remember those lost, to celebrate those who have survived, and to really renew our community's dedication to ending domestic violence. So we talk a lot about just what domestic violence looks like and how your average everyday person can make a difference in the lives of domestic violence survivors and in using their influence, in the community to make the world a more peaceful place and to make the world a place where abusers don't feel quite as free to exercise that power and control, and that survivors of domestic violence know that they have the support of their community behind them when they want to make a change.
Yeah, that's like a fantastic event. One, just a way to really honor these people that we've lost to domestic violence. And then also just a way for people to really learn about what it looks like, what they can do to help, learn about you guys and what you guys are doing. It's a little bit of a ways away, but it's definitely something to look forward to.
Yeah, and then we often have community members and groups that will sponsor events for us. And so, if anyone wants to see what we're doing anytime soon between now and October, our website is wrcdv.org. It stands for Women's Resource Center, domesticviolence.org. And we maintain an events page. So, if you want to have an event for us, or if you want to see what events are coming up that might be benefiting us, or if we're speaking on panels or going to health fairs or just spreading the word about our services, you can check out our events page and find out anything that's coming up in the near future.
Fantastic. Well, before we wrap up, what is the main thing you would like the listeners to take away from this discussion about either you guys or domestic violence as a whole?
I think we talked a lot about how domestic violence can really impact anyone. And I think that's really important for our listeners to understand is that it's not just someone else. It's not someone who, it's just not just those people who are different from me in some important way that keeps me safe. The real difference is that the person that I met and fell in love with is not abusive. And that makes me lucky, but that doesn't necessarily make someone who has been involved in an abusive relationship bad or deficient or wrong or naive or just she has low self-esteem. We work with women who are CEOs, and we work with women who have not had a full-time job. We work with women who have lived every kind of life you can possibly imagine, women from all religious backgrounds, women from all racial backgrounds, women who've lived in the US their whole life, women who are immigrants. And the commonality is that they had someone in their life who used their power and control to take advantage of them. And so domestic violence really can impact anyone. Another important thing to know is that if you take someone who's experiencing domestic violence and remove them from the community, either through domestic violence homicide, which unfortunately can be the ultimate ending to a domestic violence relationship in a lot of cases, or just by removing them from the community, by isolating them, by keeping them at home, by allowing the abuse to continue. We're losing out on everything that that person has to offer us. Interdependence is really important, and we all impact the world around us in a number of different ways, and we're all impacted by the people around us. And someone who's experiencing domestic violence and who's not able to be out in the world living freely and sharing their gifts and their talent and their beauty with our community, that's a real loss for all of us. Domestic violence doesn't just stay in the home, so we're losing everything that person might have to offer the world. But then also, her kids are going to go to school, and the trauma that they've experienced at home is going to come into the classroom with them. If she does have to seek medical care, then and she goes to the emergency room, that means that your wait in the emergency room is longer. Your taxpayer dollars are going to that medical care. So even if we think about domestic violence as a private family matter, we're all interdependent. We're all connected to one another. And even something that's happening to one person behind closed doors, it comes out into the community and it impacts all of us. So I guess the kind of the ultimate message is we're here. The Women's Resource Center to End Domestic Violence exists. We provide services to anyone who is experiencing domestic violence or sexual assault. And you can reach us anytime for our domestic violence services at our 24-hour hotline, which is 404-688-9436. And for those who've been impacted by sexual assault or any form of sexual violence, we can also be reached 24 hours a day on our sexual assault hotline at 404-377-1428.
Fantastic. I think you're exactly right. Just to wrap up real quick, that domestic violence can affect anyone and everyone. And even if it's just that one person, it does so cause a ripple effect. So I think having an organization like you guys who is teaching people about this and informing people about this and helping the ones who have been affected by it is just amazing. And it's going to help all of us in the long run. Well, Amber, thank you so much for being part of We're on the Street. You mentioned the website earlier, but could you just repeat it real quick right now?
It's WRCDV, so it stands for Women's Resource Center Domestic Violence. That's WRCDV.org.
Great. And then also where they can find you guys on social media.
Yeah, we're everywhere at WRCDV.
Great. Y'all make sure you go check out their website. It has so much information about their history, about Gwendolyn, about her entire story, about her daughter, about the programs and services they offer. All the hotline numbers are on there, how you can get involved, how you can contact them. It's all there. It's amazing. It's so informational. And then also make sure to go check out their social media so you can see maybe the events they have going on, what they're getting into day to day, maybe some behind the scenes. It all sounds great. Again, Amber, thank you so much for being part of We're on the Street. I'm Gianna Wilcox, and thank you for listening.